Hi, and welcome to the Emerging Tech Horizons podcast. I'm Arun Serafin, the Executive Director of NDIA's Emerging Technologies Institute, and today we have a very special episode of our podcast. This is our biggest episode ever. We have a very special guest, Undersecretary Chu, and we're talking about a very, very important event, the upcoming Emerging Technologies Conference and Exhibition being held in August this year. As I said, my guest today is the Honorable Heidi Shu, the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering. In this role, she serves as the Chief Technology Officer, CTO, for the Department of Defense, and she's mandated with ensuring the technological superiority of our military, and she's responsible for the research, development, and the prototyping activities across the whole DoD enterprise. She also oversees the activities of DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, MDA, the Missile Defense Agencies, as well as the DoD Basic and Applied Research Enterprise, including their laboratories, their FFRDCs, federally funded research and development centers, and their university-affiliated research centers. Previously, she served as the Army Service Acquisition Executive, responsible for all Army R&D procurement and sustainment activities. Prior to that, she had industry experience. She was the Vice President for Technology Strategy at the Raytheon Company Space and Airborne Systems. Ms. Shu has a deep technical background. She holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Mathematics from the University of Brunswick in Canada, a Master of Science degree in Mathematics from the University of Toronto, and a Master of Science degree in Electrical Engineering from UCLA. I want to say on a personal note, I've known Ms. Shu for over 15 years in many different roles, and she's been a great help to me in my various positions on Capitol Hill and in the White House as a great technical leader and technical advisor to senior leaders and a great technical leader herself of this large enterprise. So with that, I want to start by saying, you know, most of our listeners, Ms. Shu, know you as the Undersecretary for Research and Engineering. But to start, given I went through your background, can you tell us a little bit more about how you made the transition from majoring in mathematics and then to industry and from there to working in the government?
Sure, Arun. First of all, it's great to see you. It's always great to see you. Okay, so I'm happy to do this. Certainly, a lot of people wouldn't have believed a mathematician can actually move into the world of engineering. So what I ended up doing as soon as I got a job at Hughes Aircraft Company with my master's degree in mathematics, I quickly figured out that I actually need an engineering degree. So within the first 2 months I was at Hughes Aircraft Company, I immediately went to UCLA to talk to some of the professors and got on a master's program to pick up a degree in engineering, right? And then actually subsequent to that, I went on, UCLA has another program that's called engineer's program degree, okay? And you can do all the coursework for a PhD, and you have to actually pass the preliminary written and oral exam, but you don't do a dissertation. So after picking up two more degrees in engineering, I felt at least I have sufficient background, right? So during that time, of course, I was working in the area of radar, okay? I was in the radar systems group, okay? And it was fascinating. I really enjoyed it. So went into basically radar design. So that's my background, designing and developing radar systems, okay? And then basically progress through my career to become a project manager, program manager, and just continue to grow in my ranks. And during that course, I actually was nominated to be on the Air Force Scientific Advisory Board. And because of that, that really broadened my scope in terms of what the Air Force does. It's much, much bigger than in my little world that I was working on, right? And it was very appealing to figure out how challenging the problem was, right? Really opened my eyes. So I became a member on the Air Force Scientific Advisory Board, then became the vice chairman, then became the chairman of the Air Force Scientific Advisory Board. And that kind of laid the foundation for me to kind of, I would say, to be even considered for a government job, right? So I came into the government when I received a phone call, totally unexpected. Under the Obama administration, I entered initially as a principal deputy assistant secretary of the Army for acquisition, logistics, and technology, and then moving to the acting position, then became became the ASALT. Okay. Great experience after 5 years. Okay. And then I thought I could retire.
Okay. Yeah. Great experience even dealing with us in Congress back then, right?
That's right. Retired for 5 years, helped sat on a few boards and consulted for a bunch of companies. And then I received another phone call. Okay. So second phone call was from the Biden administration asking me to serve with Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering. And I think it's been fantastic experience both times in the administration. So thank you.
And thanks for your public service. It's been great to have you in those various roles and back again in this position that you have now. So let's talk about that position for a moment here. What have been your priorities for DoD research and engineering? And given those priorities, what accomplishments are you most proud of so far?
Great question. So I would say I'm very much focused on the joint mission. As soon as I came into the Pentagon, I was asked to basically help stand up the Rapid Defense Experimentation Reserve activities. It was very clear from talking to DepSecDef as well as vice chairman, every service fulfills their own capability needs, but we fight in a joint war. Right. So there's gaps within the joint warfighting area that needs to be fulfilled. So literally what we ended up doing is working very closely with the joint staff in understanding what are the joint warfighting concepts that they are fleshing out. And from the joint warfighting concept, we went to all the services, say, are you guys developing prototypes in these areas that could fulfill some of these capabilities? Okay, so we went through a process in the very first sprint, and it's scenario based in the sense that SecDef chose the scenario. So this has direct relevance to combatant commander as well, what joint staff is pushing. And we involve all the services. All the services propose over 200 projects. Okay, and then we review the 200 projects and down select it to the top 32 we think has the most relevance to that specific scenario that we're interested in funding. I will tell you this year, it was the very first experimentation we conducted in May at Camp Atterbury. Okay, so and the way that we're going to pull things through into procurement is this fall, we will have a all four-star meeting in which we will illustrate the results of these radar experimentation and really show it to all the combatant commanders, the joint staff, as well, all the services. This is how well these prototypes work in terms of capabilities. And do the services want to pull it forward in terms of procurement? Okay.
And you mentioned the services and where these projects are coming from, but in each of these cases, industry is involved, right? It's industry doing work in developing the product and the technology.
Absolutely, 100%. The other thing I wanted to add is we also held an industry day in which 500 people showed up, okay? And from that, we got more input in terms of white papers as to what's being developed that we haven't funded. Right. So we also pulled in additional innovative ideas from industry as well. So that is also in parallel being tested at these events. So it's tested at Camp Atterbury. The next piece will be tested at Northern Edge. Okay. So this is very exciting. We've gone through three different sprints. We're on sprint number four now. Okay. Each sprint is scenario based. Okay. And we do involve not just the defense industry. We involve the commercial industry as the non-traditional folks. We involved a federally funded research and development centers, the university affiliated research center. I mean, you name it, we our doors open to them. Okay, so this is how we're trying to rapidly close, rapidly develop capability and push it forward to the warfighter. The other thing I think I'm very happy about is the accelerate procurement and fielding of innovative technology. This is the $100 million of procurement money we got last year and $150 million this year to really help out innovative small companies that that has demonstrated their technology via small business innovative research, okay, as well as the non-traditional folks. So we have funded 10 companies, $10 million each to accelerate low rate initial production, and they can deliver capabilities 2 years earlier, right?
And this this program, the acronym is APFIT. It's addressing that classic challenge of the valley of death, especially for those smaller companies. And you've gotten good support from Congress on it as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the small company who receive this money are thrilled. And so are the services, right? So those are just a couple of the activity we're going on. And one other thing, if I could elaborate a little bit more, that we're doing that, I'm very happy that I'm pushing forward. We do analysis, physics-based analysis and modeling and simulation, because I want to tie the physics-based modeling simulation into our campaign-level systems-to-systems modeling and simulation effort. Because once you tie that into a campaign-level modeling simulation, we can understand the contribution of that particular technology to the outcome of the mission, right? So all of that, we're working very hard to integrate the pieces together, okay? So those are just examples of some of the activities I have ongoing. And then I think the other piece that's really important for me to highlight, and that is communicating with industry. Industry are the ones that's building the products. It's not the DOD by ourselves, right? We're completely depending on them to help us. So in terms of communication, leveraging NDIA, all the conferences you guys host, I'm incredibly grateful to get our message out, to share with industry what we're looking for, okay? So I think also opening up the engagement, I meet with medium-sized companies on a quarterly basis with our CEOs. I do that with small companies every other month, the CEOs of small companies. I meet with top seven primes, CTOs on a quarterly basis. So I have a lot of engagements with industry just to let them know what I'm interested in.
And that's great. And that flows nicely into the next part of this conversation. And like you said, NDIA and the Emerging Technologies Institute have been working with your team and your partners with Secretary LaPlante over on the acquisition and sustainment side to put together one of those kinds of industry engagement activities. It's a conference, the Emerging Technologies for Defense Conference and Exhibition. We've been working together with your team to put together what we think is a really robust agenda to push forward those ideas of how the government and industry and the labs can all work together to push some of those new technologies the way that you've been describing. The event's going to be August 28th to 30th at the JW Marriott downtown Washington, D.C. And it's going to bring together government, industry, commercial experts to demonstrate and highlight the most innovative modern technologies that are useful and critical for our current set of defense missions, and talk about some of the broader defense implications of emerging technologies. So we're going to be gathering technology leaders from all the various sectors, including a set of fantastic keynote speakers. I'll say one of them is you, which is fantastic. In addition to that, Deputy Secretary Hicks, Admiral Aquilino from INDOPACOM will be speaking. Secretary LaPlante, of course, the director of DARPA, the director of DIU, and many, many others. We're also going to have panel discussions with government and industry experts on things like technology roadmaps in some of these emerging technology areas, some of the current operational challenges, so that we can expose to some of our industry partners and academic partners some of the real challenges or opportunities to make use of new technologies to support defense missions. And then, of course, a discussion of the actual business opportunities, the real transition opportunities for the companies, where they can move some of their new ideas and technologies into actual procurement and then use. And then, of course, like a good NDIA conference, there'll be lots of presentations from experts on their cutting edge technologies, as well as exhibits and displays and demonstrations and things like that. So I just want to highlight that we're really excited in the work we've been able to do with your team and Dr. LaPlante's team in really shaping this agenda. We're really looking forward to it coming up here in August. One of the things that we talked about with you and your team is the mission areas that you'd like the conference to focus on. And so the conference focus is going to be on a set of important mission areas, and we'll just go through them briefly here. Contested logistics, counter UAS, and operational energy. And so in those areas, what types of collaborations do you hope to see come out of this conference?
I think, first of all, the conference gives us an opportunity to explain, here are the capabilities we are looking for. And if there are small companies that's designing, developing stuff that we are not aware of, we would love to know, what is it that you have? What great stuff that you may have, right? So I'm looking forward to actually going to some of the booths to talk to industry to figure out what they have that we may not know about. Right? That's one piece. And the other thing, the conference brings a fantastic opportunity just to have dialogue between industry and government, right? And our military folks. So to share the insights, it provides also fantastic opportunities for industry to engage among themselves, right? This is where you're finding out, hey, this small company is doing really cool stuff. I may need this in my system, right? So it provides a fantastic opportunity for sharing your information, which is what I'm really looking for.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're happy to you know, with your help and with Dr. LaPlante's help, we've lined up a really good set of PMs and PEOs to be present at the event, to give those opportunities for industry to interact. So it's a two-way dialogue, like you're saying,
yes,
as well as that teaming between industry that's going to have to occur if we're really going to be first with some of these new technologies and getting them deployed faster, as fast as we possibly can. So we really appreciate it. The three specific mission areas that you selected for the focus are based on current events in Ukraine and past lessons learned in Iraq and Afghanistan, and in anticipation of challenges for future conflicts, maybe in Pacific theater. Again, contested logistics, counter UAS, operational energy, all three of which are going to be shaped greatly by the use of emerging technologies. So let's go through each of them briefly here. Can you discuss the importance of contested logistics to the warfighter, and let us know what you hope to see discussed at the conference in contested logistics?
I think one of the key things that we'll be looking for, as you understand, if we have to traverse great distances, okay, how do we bring fuel, ammunition, food into a base or operating environment? What are the ways we could bring our capability, our equipment there without being shot at, right? There's a couple aspects. It's not the same as I'm just going to use commercial air. Well, when you're in a highly contested fight, commercial air may not be available. What are other ways we can, for example, deliver things to ships, right? Ships to shore, ships to ships, right? Multiple different avenues of delivering capabilities is what we're looking for. We're looking for potentially novel ideas, okay? Even things like developing things at the point of need, right? So if you could just, you know, generate fuel at the point of need, then I don't need to traverse 1,000 miles, right? So all kinds of, I'm looking for all kinds of novel ideas that may come out of this.
Yeah, and when you think about the technologies that underpin a logistics mission, you know, you touched on things like autonomous systems right there. You talked about things like the data tracking, the tracking of the assets, those sorts of things. But it's also, you know, it gets into things like resilient communications and interoperability between the services. And so there's a host of these technologies, I think, that we can touch on as we think about this contested logistics mission.
Absolutely. You're right on point.
Another theme area here is going to be counter UAS. Can you talk a little bit about the challenges and what you'd like to see in terms of counter UAS at the event?
Well, I think if anybody who's watching the war that's unfolding in front of us for the last year in Ukraine, you understand the importance of counter UAS. You know, certainly each service have developed their own system. But what I'm interested in is I call it a layered strategy, in the sense that how do we continuously add additional capabilities as the threats evolve, right? So I think it isn't just one approach, but it's a multitude of different approaches we have to do to counter UAS, okay? And this is a critical problem that isn't going to go away. It is just going to escalate in terms of importance. So what I'm looking for is, are there solution space, and where are you in terms of technology maturity? What are the things we could pull quickly through development, and what are the things we could test rapidly? And then what are the things we can field rapidly, right? So those are all the things we're interested in.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing in from the conference perspective is, again, we're doing this event unclassified. And so small businesses can really hear some of the challenges maybe in a different way than they've heard before, and try to see if their technologies can be useful to your mission. I think the other piece is, because of our themes on emerging technologies, it opens up a discussion of what's the right approach. Are we thinking about an EWRF style approach, or maybe directed energy style approach, or putting up our own UAVs or whatever? I think there's an openness to looking at the range of emerging technologies and how any of them could support the mission.
Absolutely. There isn't just one approach, it's a multitude of different approaches.
The last major area is operational energy. Again, you know, we talk about the size of the Pacific and what's necessary. It ties into the contested logistics mission as well. So, you know, when you think about operational energy and what the underlying emerging technologies are and what you'd like to see talked about in this conference, you know, what comes to mind for you?
So to me, the area, do we have the next generation of batteries, next generation of electrical systems that we could charge at the point of need, right? Is there more efficient solar panels that we can leverage, right? What are the cool technologies that's ongoing that we can leverage? And beyond just electrification of some platforms, right? So I'm looking at innovative technology. How do you convert light into basically fuel, right? As well as what are the things we could burn? Maybe it's just burning trash and generate fuel, right? There's a lot of novel things I think that's ongoing in the area of research. I think having this opportunity to pull all of that together and seeing all of that in one place, that'll be so much easier for all of us.
Yeah, and energy efficiency technologies, energy harvesting technologies. I mean, there's a whole set of things that could be discussed here. The other thing that's interesting, I think, about operational energy is that it's so classically dual use. There's a Yes. lot of innovation in the commercial sector because they're trying to drive down cost.
Yes.
In their energy usage. And so I think you're hoping to see some of those commercial solutions as well.
Absolutely.
And so those three mission areas, again, are highlights of the conference. But, you know, you are research and engineering. I am a sciencey guy. There is a fourth track that's important, and that's game-changing technologies, the emerging technologies, things like AI, future G, biotech, sometimes even down to the basic research elements of those. So what work has R&E been doing in these areas, and what kinds of things does R&E need from industry and academia in these technology areas? And what would you like to see happen at the conference in that space of game-changing technologies?
I think I would love to be able to see from industry's perspective, what are they working on that's very novel? So for example, we're in the S&T area, we're looking at taking stuff from plants via biotech and turning it into rubber, okay? Well, then we will have a domestic source of rubber, which is pretty cool, right? There's a biofuel we're interested in. It would be wonderful if we get to the point we can use seawater and turn it into fuel, right? So there are a lot of novel ideas that's being worked on across the board. So we are very interested in seeing, are there novel new ideas that we haven't even thought of that somebody somewhere within the US is thinking of?
Yeah, and I think the way your team is shaping up this agenda, the conference is going to be a great opportunity for the attendees to see what your principal directors who are leading in these areas like biotech and like AI and like 5G are doing to coordinate, develop technology roadmaps, put out those opportunities for industry and academia to work together and work with the department. And so, you know, I think that agenda is coming together nicely for those principal directors to show off what they're doing. In addition, you know, we left out, there's so much happening at this event, we left out the fact that Office of Strategic Capital will be presenting what they're working on. SBIR will be presenting their opportunities, all happening at this event. I think, you know, I think, Ms. Xu, the other thing I want to tie this back to is your own background stems from technical academic work, a long successful career in industry, and then working in government. And that's the strength of the United States, is keeping those sectors tied together. So, you know, I wonder if you feel like R&E is really doing what it can do, what it needs to do. What are you proud of in trying to bring those sectors together to promote innovation in the defense space?
I would say there's plenty of innovation across this country. It's incredible. No matter where I go, I see innovation. Okay, so I don't think there's a shortage of innovation at all. It's a matter of bringing people together to understand what the needs of the military is and understand potential solution space. So this is where NDIA comes in. So I look forward to seeing you guys in August. Thank you so much, Arun.
Thanks for helping us with that conference. We look forward to your being at the conference and walking around talking to some of the exhibitors and the folks who attend. I want to close by thanking everyone for joining us for this week's episode of Emerging Tech Horizons. Please see the description box here on the screen for the links and more information about the conference. Or use the QR code that's on the screen. Registration for the conference is open, but limited. And so you got to move fast. We still have some opportunities for exhibits and displays, but those are going quickly as well. It's a big and exciting event. We hope to see you all there. If you've enjoyed this podcast or any of our podcasts, please don't forget to hit the like button and subscribe to our channel to stay up to date with everything we're doing at NDIA and the Emerging Technologies Institute. With that, thank you all. And thank you especially, Ms. Xu, for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Arun. See you soon.